You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 3 November. U.S. unemployment data due at 2:30, expected no change, 3.8%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb offices in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Mateta Tulari from RMB. Sibanye Stillwater update. Man, I mean, just lots of pain. I mean, is there any hope or just time to move on from these PGM miners? Stefano Morani from Renogen on recent results. Funding helium leaks in phase two. Some thoughts from me on the power of time in your investments. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. No reason to change the Saab mandate, says Ramaphosa. Makes no mention of a possible replacement for Kuban Naidu, who's leaving, but also doesn't want to change mandate. That perhaps is the bigger one. Business Day, Africa pushes for three-year AGOA reviews. Trade Minister once extended the annual eligibility to a three-year process. Morning markets. US was green. S&P up 1.9%. NASDAQ 1.75%. Over in the East, we've got Sydney off a 10th, and Tokyo closed for Culture Day. Commodities all over the place. Gold, 1,994. Brent a little higher, 8703. Platinum, 933. And palladium, 1,125. Rand, 1838. Bitcoin, 24,700. 10 cent up, 2.9% in the Hong Kong lunch break. And top 40 opening call, about 380 points to the up. That is 0.6% green.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Today now with Mateta Tulari, head FX execution at RMB. Mateta, appreciate, as always, the early morning. The Sibanye Stillwater, it's been a horror journey for them. Gold doing well, but off low base because, of course, the strike last year. Local PGM, I mean, adjusted EBITDA there down from 8.3 to 2.5 billion. The Stillwater mine struggling. I mean, tough, tough numbers. Lots of talk of restructuring as a PGM and prices really go against the business.
Yeah, good morning, Simon. I suppose, look, Sibanye is obviously one of the world's biggest PGM producers amongst the likes of Anglo-American, Impala Platinum and Northern. But I mean, I think in the trading update yesterday, they did show that they have produced and sold more PGMs in the latest quarter than a year ago. But obviously, the basket price, as we've all seen, has been cut almost in half. And obviously, that has hurt, you know, them as one of the world's biggest precious metals miners. Now, the problem is, you did see PGM production growing by 7.5%. But year on year, the basket price has plunged by 40%. Now, obviously, that, you know, resulted in their earnings falling by close to 64%. Now, you know, the drop in prices was one of the reasons why also already last week you saw them coming out with the headline that they could be cutting jobs by like 4,000 people losing their jobs as commodity prices have dropped from their record highs during COVID-19 in that period. Now, also the global macroeconomic environment remains really challenging. And I think, you know, you're going to see them continue to assess their positioning of their operations and obviously looking for some sort of optimal performance and sustainability through this downward cycle. I mean, we've seen the cycle in the commodity market. We've seen the downturn in palladium prices already this year has surpassed their expectations. Now, obviously, you know, some of the mining companies obviously really do ride out to the wave. Some do not hedge most of their production. And obviously, what you are finding is that the palladium prices has also dropping very much lower and faster than anticipated. And that's despite the great production that they're having. And already, you're also already finding another challenge that the persistent inflation and the skill shortages has obviously resulted in costs remaining significantly higher for them. Now, if you look at Neil Froneman and his acquisition drives, he has been hunting for green metals to meet the rising demand for battery metals, and we know that the EV space is obviously something that is a lot of tailwinds, and obviously I think it is something that a lot of the mining companies are looking towards to actually facilitate cleaner resources and technologies, especially in the electronic vehicle market. But over the past few years, I mean, you've seen Neil Frohnemann already trying to diversify their asset portfolio into that battery mining space, and obviously that has also meant for them increasing their presence in other markets as well, and trying to diversify its recycling and reprocessing operations. So clearly a lot of strategy of work taking place out at Sibanye, and I think for now, as you've seen the share price, it has taken a bit of a beating, and I think it's only a matter of time before things turn. I mean, we've seen the cycle turn throughout the likes of Western Platinum, which is now part of Sibanye. Over the years, we've seen a lot of the mining houses turn. But obviously, like we know in the commodity space, it's always about the cycles.
Yeah, it is about those cycles. And they do turn. It's just hard to know when. A quick last question to you around the currency, 1838 this morning. Short answer, the currency market liked the medium-term budget policy statement. And that's what I love about the Rand. It's kind of almost a voting tool until gives you insight into what people think.
Exactly, very much so. I mean, already it looks like already even the likes of Moody's coming out and saying, look, I think the budget confirms already cautious assessment by them, and obviously it underpins the stable outlook for them. Obviously, they're also still highlighting the key risks. We've seen the likes of the ratings agencies. Obviously, it looks like they're going to really be holding for now. I think it's about government and Treasury saying the right things. I think it's also for them also to make sure that they do those right things. And I suppose that is why you've also seen the Rand strengthen quite a bit. I mean, also already another quite interesting portion about this is the fact that historically every time the Springboks have won the World Cup, the Rand has strengthened. So it looks like a self-fulfilling prophecy as well, because we won the World Cup last week, and prior to us winning the World Cup, we were at just above 19, and this morning we around this 1840 levels. But make no mistake, I mean, the economy has been badly hobbled by obviously the load shedding, the logistic constraints, crime, corruption, the high levels of unemployment. So there is still quite a lot of work to be done. The mere fact that also you have Jay Powell and team also looking slightly dovish does add a factor of risk on into the market. And I suppose this is why you're seeing the Rand 60 cents stronger from where we were last week Thursday.
Sir Khaleesi, not for president, but maybe for finance minister. We'll leave it there. Mateta Tulari, head of FX execution at RMB, appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today around Sibanye Stillwater. Are you holding this golden PGM miner? As Mateta said there, it is cyclical, and that cycle will turn. But until it turns, it is painful, and sometimes it takes some time. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and X.
Your money can do more when it's investing with conviction. Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to in-depth, broad market research and high-return investment strategies. So invest in a select set of companies with long-term structural growth potential with StanLib's Global Growth Fund. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Taking Stefano Morani, CEO of Renogen. Disclaimer up front, I hold shares in Renogen. Stefano, you had results earlier this week, 6 months ending August. Loss-making, shouldn't have surprised people. I don't want to delve into numbers. I want to delve into phase one. LNG, how's production? What capacity you're at, and what are sales going like?
Yeah, so the capacity that we're at is a little over 40%. It's almost the 50% mark. So right now we're producing about just over 20 tons of LNG per day. Nameplate capacity is between 50 and 55 tons of LNG per day. Then obviously on the helium side, as soon as the helium is fully operational, we'll be again at about the 40% of the 300 kilos. And once we're in full-scale operation, which will be about halfway through the year next year, will then be up to close to the 300 kilograms per day of helium.
Stay with the LNG. I want to come to the helium in a sec. Around 40%, what gets you to what you call the nameplate? I mean, is that just as you ramp up and sort of stress test the facility?
So the facility itself is fully stress tested and all of the different components work. So now what we're doing is that the additional wells that we've drilled, we need to tie those into the main pipeline. So we've got 15 wells connected at the moment. There's another 4 that are waiting to be tied in. And the drilling rigs have already commenced the drilling of additional wells.
The sales of LNG, because I understand you had a couple of contracts already, and much of what you're producing is already going to market.
Correct. All the LNG that we produce just goes right out the door.
Okay. Helium, you had a cold box leak. You say you'll be up and running. Timeline for this, I think if I recall correctly, you were saying by the end of the year it should be in and you should be producing by next year.
Yeah, that's all accurate. That's all accurate.
The leak in it, do you have a claim against the manufacturer or the plant designer, or is that just part of the operation? Sometimes these things happen.
We're working through all the permutations. Obviously, the contractor is still on site. I don't necessarily want to go into contractuals until the commissioning is finished.
Okay. That was phase one. It'll get up through next year. The next biggie, of course, is phase two. You've done capital raises through the year. You've got some 750 million, 1.2 billion, and we're talking dollars here. The rest of the money, how are you going to look to raise that? NASDAQ IPO still on the cards?
Yeah, very much so. So of the $1.2 billion, there's obviously a private equity transaction, and I call it private equity because it's not at the listed space. It's at the asset level. That's for investment at the subsidiary level. In addition to that transaction, there's a tranche which we'll be looking to IPO on the NASDAQ with. And that gets us to the point where we are able to unlock the debt, draw down, and we can bring into operation phase two at 30 million standard cubic feet per day. Then in time, subject to market conditions, we'll then look to conclude a secondary offer on the NASDAQ. And the secondary offer then allows us to unlock the full project up to 45 million standard cubic feet per day.
I mean, the important point is that the conditions precedent don't require a NASDAQ listing. They just require capital raise, and you can get that from other areas.
Absolutely right. Whether it's a private equity deal, whether it's the convertible, it really, there's no restriction on what the capital is. It's just the capital.
And phase two, you're kind of splitting it into two parts. The first part, about two-thirds of full capacity, and then the last third, as you said, when you've got that sort of final tranche of capital.
Yes, absolutely. It's just very much a strategy of reducing dilution. That is incidentally a strategy that's quite readily adopted here in the US by many of the oil and gas companies that IPO. There have been some instances, Cheniere, for example, they IPO'd for the first time in their project and they did 7 subsequent capital raises, I believe, over a period of 14 months and every time at a higher share price. It's par for the course on the US side.
I take your point, because it's as you sort of generate the profitability. If you put aside the development of phase two, phase one at full capacity, does that put you in a profit situation already?
Yeah, absolutely. The project was designed to be profitable from the beginning. It was a proof of concept, but it's still a profitable proof of concept.
Okay, so actually profits do start to flow. Completion date for phase two, 2027. Will that be both the sort of the two-third and then the sort of next last third coming on as well?
The timing on the next last third is all subject to when we do the second cap raise.
Gotcha.
So it's literally just a function of whenever we're ready for the secondary offering into the NASDAQ, that then completely determines when it goes from 30 million to 45 million.
Gotcha. You're talking in the results around gas shortage coming in South Africa. I've heard trails of it, but talk us through it, because it's something which I've heard bits of rumors, but I don't know the details around this.
We've got no insights further than what we've picked up in the media. I'm certainly not speaking from a position of what we've heard. Let me just be clear about that. It's clear that there's a gas curtailment coming through in the Romco pipeline and gas coming in from Mozambique. Obviously, it was made evident and public in the market that the Pundit Temane fields were running dry. And I think plans are being made to begin curtailing that gas feed coming into Johannesburg. Now, the issue there is that the amount of gas that's going through the pipeline to all of the various customers, I believe it's somewhere in the region of about 220,000 gigajoules per day, give or take. That's a lot of energy. That is a serious amount of energy to be cutting off to corporate South Africa in Johannesburg. So I think projects like this, projects like Amersfoort, there are a number of projects in South Africa that should be coming online a lot faster to try and make up some of this stopgap.
A last question. You did the very small sort of proof of concept. You've done phase one as a sort of bigger proof of concept, now moving on to phase two. There's been some delays, some of it COVID, some of it is leaks in helium boxes. How sort of happy are you with the process? I mean, mining is tough. Gas extraction is tough. As you sit here in late 2023, how happy are you with the overall process so far?
You know, I'm not going to wax lyrical about the fact that we did everything exactly as we should have done. Mistakes were made. We've learned from them. One of the most important things that we take away from this is the fact that the way that phase one unfolded has allowed us to do a thorough lessons learned and completely modify the strategy in terms of how we contract in phase two. So overall, I think the team, given the resources that they had, have done an amazing job. The team really are world-class and outstanding. They did very difficult work under extremely difficult conditions, and they've managed to do really well. So I'm incredibly proud of the team. Could the phase one project have been done better? Yes, of course it could have. But we've owned our mistakes from the beginning. The important thing is that we've learned what the mistakes were, and we're implementing these in phase two.
That's perhaps part of the key point. I mean, phase one is a proof of concept, but perhaps bigger than proof of concept was lessons learned for a significantly larger phase two.
That was the point of doing a phase one.
We'll leave it there. Stefano Marani, CEO at Renogen, always appreciate the time.
We had to record Stefano because he was in the US, and subsequent to that interview, they put out a statement, Renogen. They said Renogen has already stated preparing for a US IPO to maximize the chances of success. As such, a decision to relocate the CEO, that being Stefano, to the US temporarily was taken based on recommendation of US advisors. In essence, they need to raise capital in the US, so go and be where the people are. Nick Mitchell, the COO, will oversee business operational aspects here down in South Africa, which of course is the Virginia plant.
When you stay invested over time in Stanlib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money's in for some smooth sailing. With our global partners, JP Morgan Asset Management, at the helm, your money can withstand the pressure and bad weather day-to-day market conditions cause. All aboard? Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Some Friday thoughts from me. You've always heard that phrase, time in the market, and how important it is. But here's a fun fact which I love to throw around. If you've got a kid who was born today and you deposited the full annual limit into a tax-free account for them, that is 36,000 Rand. So it's a chunk of cash, but let's say you had that in your couch. You put that into a tax-free for them, leave it until age 65, it could be worth about 2.5 million Rand in today's money. 4% rule, that's 100,000 a year tax-free. That's not enough to be retiring on, but let's be clear, all you did was that 36,000. It's those 65 years. My assumption there is a after-inflation return of 7%, and of course in that tax-free. The real deal is time. It always, absolutely, it's the most important tool an investor has. So two thoughts then stem from that. The first, get your kids investing as soon as possible, even small amounts, even, you know, grannies and aunties and uncles, you know, putting, you know, literally 100 bucks or something into an account. I know easy equities got all messy, but the kids' accounts under 21 is not going to attract that 25 Rand fee. So get that, the power of time, absolutely working. The second thought, we're all aiming for that retirement, that mythical age of 65, when we stop working, stop earning, and start living off our money. That is the whole purpose of this investing, right? Is to get to that point where we start living off it. But here's the thing. We often look at that 65, and it'll be different number, different age for different people. We often look at it as, well, at that age, we then stop the investing process. No, we're not. I mean, if you're 65, you've, you know, statistically got a 50% chance of making it another 30 years. We're still investing in our retirement. We're doing it differently, but absolutely, we're still investing. So even the older folks, you say, yo, you wish you could go back in time and, you know, put some money into a tax-free when you were a newborn. Well, we've still got time, even those older folks like us.
That's it for today. We were chatting with Lenovo and Bella yesterday about MTN and Vodacom. And they've had a fairly hoary year. Those prices have been under fairly severe pressure. We asked you whether you were interested in either of them. Almost half of you said no, neither for you. Thanks very much. You'll stay away. MTN was preferred by just over a quarter. The rest split between Vodacom, or a bunch of you actually saying, hang on, a bit of both, perhaps. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and X. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday offshore.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.